that it will be the best match they can figure out to the strain that's coming.
So it sounds like we need to be vigilant. It's important to get our flu shots to protect against the seasonal variety. But if we look at an example of like the H5N1 flu that has been circulating in birds, I understand, some scientists have said that it's just a few mutations away from becoming a pandemic. That sounds alarmist. Is it accurate? And what can we do about it?
Well, first, I'd say that it is occasionally going from a bird into a human and causing illness in that human. The evidence that it can go from human to human is extremely small. The idea that it's a mutation or two away from being able to transmit from human to human is possibly true, but that doesn't mean that, again, the virus is busily trying every combination until it can do that. I would argue that the fact that it has not been able to do that, I think, is a sign that our surveillance is extremely good and not a sign that this virus is getting closer and closer to being able to circulate. That being said, we don't know how pandemics start. What we do know is that there have been pandemics every 20 or 30 years for a long, long time. And so the smart money is on this could happen again, and this is likely to happen again. And so we need to be vigilant about surveillance for new types, and we need to be constantly working on how can we produce a really good vaccine really fast, because that's how we'll stop the next pandemic.
Ann Reed, thank you so much for speaking with us.
You're welcome.
Ann Reed is the executive director of the National Center for Science Education based in Oakland, California. She's also a molecular biologist and responsible for helping to sequence the 1918 flu genome.
Coming up, flu viruses are not the only organisms that are quick to adapt.
Well, we can't finish all of Big Picture Science for today. It's 1 o'clock. It's time for our Tuesday forum, which is Dearborn Heights News and Views. Just want to say it is our Radiothon 2014 pledge drive, and we need your pledges. And we can take those pledges anytime. In fact, just give us a call, 313-845-9676, and I'll take your pledge myself while the Dearborn Heights News and Views is going on. Okay, so it's whfr.fm. And let's start the show right now. You are listening to the Heights News and Views, presented on the second Tuesday of every month on WHFR Dearborn, making waves at 89.3 FM. This program is devoted entirely on the issues of interest to the residents of the city of Dearborn Heights, Michigan. And, you know, this is part of the WHFR weekly talk show format, presented every Tuesday from 1 to 2 p.m., so check back other Tuesdays for other shows here from the station Making Waves. And now, on to your host, Ned Apigian, who is Dearborn Heights councilperson. Take it away, Ned.
Thank you, Jay. Well, we're lucky today. We have none other than Officer Perinello, who was in charge of crime prevention in the city of Dearborn Heights. Hopefully, you're going to learn today what you shouldn't do, what you've been doing that's been wrong, and you're going to find out what to do is right. And those of you that are members of Homeowners Association, you'll always see Mark coming to your Homeowners Association and giving us advice. So we're going to begin today to find out something about Mark. Mark, tell us about yourself, where you're from, where you're born, and then how'd you get into police work? Just about you personally, so people can get an idea.
Yeah, I was born in Dearborn Heights, Michigan. My mom and dad still live there. Went to high school at Divine Child in Dearborn. Went to college in Kalamazoo. Became interested in law enforcement before I actually went to college. I had an uncle that was a police officer in Detroit, and went to work with him a few times and got interested in government, and that kind of led me to my law enforcement career. So that's my background.
When did you join the police force?
Well, out of college, I joined the Dearborn Heights Police Force as a cadet in 1987, so I've been there for quite a while. I was a cadet for about a year and a half, Then I was out of the academy. I was assigned to the road patrol. I was on the road for about 5 years, and I've been in the investigative division since then, and doing crime prevention, and now I investigate home invasions and business break-ins.
Does everybody begin on the road patrol?
Yeah, pretty much out of the academy. You're assigned to a patrol or a road patrol officer, field training officer, and they kind of show you the ropes a little bit, get your feet wet.
Those are the guys that give you tickets, right?
Well,
that's their primary job. Or?
Sometimes. It's not their primary job, but sometimes that happens. Part of our job is enforcing traffic laws. So right out of the academy, that's you're assigned to somebody with some seniority, some experience, and you do your road patrol work, and then when there's opportunities in the department, you can put in for them things that you're interested in. We've got a whole bunch of different divisions in the department that you can specialize in after you kind of do a probationary period.
What's interesting, what's the difference between a cadet and a reserve officer?
Well, a cadet is actually paid, and they take people as cadets who are interested in making law enforcement their career.
What are they paid, half price or what?
I'm not actually sure what the cadets. I know when I was a cadet, we were paid a lot less than half price.
Okay.
We were cadets at the department. They have cadets now. They got away from that program for a little while. But the cadets are back, and they do things around the station. They take care of the jail cells and watch prisoners.
So are they participants or graduates of a particular police program? Like, Jay, do we have such a program at the Henry Ford Community College?
We do have several different specialties within criminal justice in the first 2 years. I know one is a corrections option, mm-hmm. and I think we're even doing something with private investigating. I'm not sure whether they were talking about a certificate in that area, too, and that's a state license kind of thing, I think.
Right.
But usually it's a head start. Yeah, we were interested. Last month we had the new fire chief from Dearborn Heights here.
Oh, right.
Didn't know we had a fire safety program.
Really?
So we had to inform him that we have a really, really good, complete 2-year program, and he was mentioning Schoolcraft. So
right. I had to plug
the program a little
sure.
bit. So
well, yeah, we. I don't think he, we're not aware that.
Well, he was happy to find out because he needs some new firemen. So you
absolutely.
Know, and sure, you need a lot of training and certificates. There's a lot of and we had. We accomplish all of it in that program, but it's a pretty intensive 2-year program. It's called an Associate of Science, of course, because there's a lot of stuff you have to know about chemicals and sure. fires and flames, and there's some science I bet might even apply to criminal justice careers.
Sure.
Depending on what specialty you go into.
Right. It's really amazing how the community college programs are really specialized like this. Everybody thinks you're supposed to go to college and study Shakespeare, poetry, and all sorts of abstract, obtuse issues that you find yourself unemployable. But in your case, what did you study when you were in college? Did you actually finish a 4-year program or a 2-year associate's?
Yeah, I finished a 4-year program, but I actually studied, I was interested in government. Political science.
I see.
When I went to college, and like I said, after talking to my uncle and seeing some of the stuff he did and the different avenues that his police work went, that's when I actually became interested in law enforcement. So,
is your uncle still on the force?
He's
or
retired from Detroit. Yeah, he was
he was a Detroit police officer.
Yes, sir. He he retired after about 35 years of service, but in his last few years, he was working. An elite repeat offenders program. So their focus was solving crimes, going first to people that they had already dealt with, and looking at those mm-hmm. People as suspects. So he had to use his head. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I have the information in front of me here about the HFCC program. I'll just take a minute to mention it. It is an associative arts program in criminal justice. It's called Law Enforcement with Police Academy. That's the complete name of it, established back in 2009, and it's under the social science area. So it's designed to prepare students for employment in law enforcement positions requiring both an associate degree and Michigan Commission on Law Enforcement Standards, MCOLS, certification. So HFCC students may complete the associate degree by completing coursework at HFCC, then transfer to the police academy at Schoolcraft College.
I guess we
don't have our, but it's an agreement. We've made an agreement.
So Schoolcraft College has a
they have an official
4-year program.
No, but they have a police academy. That's the final component of the program to pass those MCOL certification issues.
Well, you know, our listeners should really pay attention to such things. You have someone in your family. You could see how Mark was encouraged to be a police officer because someone in the family was a police officer. And often people are wondering, well, what do I got to do? In the old days, if you were the right descendant of the Irish police officer in New York, you had that legacy advantage, and that's why all the firemen are related one way or in the city and the police officer. So if you're interested in a career route, and we are at an educational institution, and young men and women, I assume there's as many women in the program as there are men, should consider these programs, whether it's in police or fire. I know in the city of Dearborn Heights, we have a very strict, restringent requirements for officers. I know we're a little short. We'll talk about those numbers later if you're familiar with them. And we're looking for applicants, but unfortunately, we're turning down applicants from other cities that don't meet our standards. And I'm finding that a little bit surprising, Jay.
Well, I think we need the best people in these two critical, public safety occupational fields, and it's good to have high standards. It's too bad that some programs or some students maybe aren't paying attention as well as they should and aren't quite as serious. You have to be quite serious. The health careers area is life or death, but so is fire, so is police. You get into issues every now and then, hopefully not too many times, but, it could happen at any time that it will be a life or death decision on how to enforce the law and protect the public and protect the property and so on. And so we're counting on these people, and I think it's good to have the standards. I know with our health careers program, for example, many, many different kinds of specialties, nursing and many others, a lot of students don't make it through because even on the test, we require 90% or better success. Because it is life or death. So, sometimes I think it might be life or death working at a fast food restaurant. That's my own joke. I'm sorry.
Right.
By the way, all opinions expressed on WHFR, including this talk show, are those of the participants, not necessarily anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. But I wanted to thank the officer here with us today for his service, because it's not an easy career choice. Maybe you had some background and knew something about it, but it's a tough job considering what might happen at any point in time.
Sure. I tell people, and I've talked to several classes here. I talk to Mr. Osowski's class a couple times a year, and we go over the whole spectrum of law enforcement, all the way from your early days, college days, and the things that might affect your background check actually for getting hired. But yeah, you're right. I tell the students in all the classes that I speak to, I've never gotten up in the morning and told myself, you know what, I don't want to go to work today because I didn't like my job. I mean, I like what I do. There's been days where it's been nice out, I'd rather gone golfing or something, but it's not because of the fact that I didn't like my job.
Yeah, it's totally important.
Yep. Well, anyway, I like to devote the first quarter to about... Mark, are you married? Do you have children?
I'm married. I've got 3 children.
Okay.
One that's actually going to start college this coming
fall. Oh, Lord
have
mercy.
Fall.
You're that old?
Yeah, he's that old. So am I. But, interested in sports. I'm a college football official. That's what I do in my spare time.
That's what we want to learn is things like that, a college football official.
Yeah.
In Dearborn Heights or?
I go all over the place. St. Louis, Missouri, and Kentucky, and Upper Peninsula, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania. So.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff you want to learn. We want to learn in the first page, just about you as a regular human being.
Right. Well, that's, I'm pretty
and
close.
So you live in town, you got three kids, you're married, and I don't know, what percentage of our police force lives in town? Do you have an idea?
Probably. I don't know, probably over half.
I would say. Yeah. So half are able to live out of town. Well, that's an interesting fact. Okay, well, let's remind our listeners that we are in our radiothon, and after I give this station ID, we're going to make a couple of announcements. You wanted to?
Yeah, go ahead, Nan.
I just want to let you know you are listening to the Heights News and Views, a monthly talk show program presented here on the second Tuesday of every month on 89.3 FM, making waves from the Henry Ford Community College radio station broadcasting from Dearborn, Michigan. You can re-listen to this archive program on the internet on your computer by selecting whfr.fm to get to our station's site homepage. Select the talk show button and select today's date or any date of the second Tuesday and the time of 1 to 2, and the show title, The Heights News and Views, will appear at that time. And you can listen to today's program again, and you can listen to this program anywhere in the world if you do exactly the same thing. Jay, thank you.
Okay, it's our pledge drive, folks, Radiothon 2014, and so listen to this announcement. This is the main reason that we have to have money for this year. Take a listen.
On board Radiothon 2014. Each year, WHFR uses the money we raise for essentials and basic needs. This year, we are having a special Radiothon goal. Our Studio A and B broadcast consoles, aka boards, are getting old and wearing out. Our goal this year is to replace them with the funds raised from our pledge drive. We want to ensure the best quality for our listeners with fully functional equipment. So get on board and help us purchase the new boards we desperately need with your pledge of support. It's easy. Simply call 313-845-9676 or 1-800-585-HFCC extension 9676. Or you can always go to our website, whfr.fm, and click on the Radiothon 2014 link. So get on board Radiothon 2014 and pledge your support now.
So the phone number again for Radiothon 2014 is 313-845-9676, option 1. I will take the phone call in the background while Ned continues the interview here. This is Dearborn Heights News and Views for this month. And take it away, Ned.
Okay, well, we're back live. This is not a pre-recorded program, so if we make any mistakes, you'll know we can't fix them.
Well, it will be, of course, archived for people to listen to at other times, and
right.
Perhaps
we
people do from our website, whfr.fm. But live right now, so don't make any mistakes, Ned.
Don't make any mistakes. Go. Anyway, Mark, your work is divided in a couple different phases, which I'd like for us to talk in this second segment of one of your phases without mixing up phases, so we can explain to people completely. Pick the phase you'd like to talk about first.
Well, I'll pick the phase that I like the best.
There's always the best way to start, the one you like the best.
It's my work as the crime prevention officer, and my initial goal when I was selected crime prevention officer to start a neighborhood watch program in our city, or actually to restart a neighborhood watch program that was in the 80s, they had one in our city. And for unknown reasons, it kind of went away. And
what distinguishes a neighborhood watch program from?
Well,
I always think about those signs as just being a sign to scare you off.
Right. Well,
what actually happens?
That's kind of part of it. When I started crime prevention, and I pretty much started from scratch, I got information from other cities that were running crime prevention programs, and we kind of put together our program based on the things we liked from stuff that other cities were doing.
So everybody does things differently.
Yeah, a lot of people do things different. There's a lot of programs that are strict where they go by a percentage of the people on that block have to participate in the program, and we kind of got away from that. Basically, what our goal was to explain to our city residents and businesses that the crime prevention goal of the city, obviously to reduce crime and make people safe, depends upon the fact that everybody's got to be involved with it, with communication from the police department. So we can provide communication, we can provide direction, but the actual program, the success of the program itself, is dependent upon the people that are part of the program and the businesses that are involved also. So that's our goal. What I found out is that through the years starting Neighborhood Watch programs or even being involved with civic associations, that it's more of an education on our part to get people on the same page to kind of instill those responsibilities that you have as a resident or a business owner in the city.
I live in the Military Hills subdivision. Mm-hmm. What does the Military Hills subdivision or its members do in order to be connected with you in this program?
Well, I've been to plenty of your meetings.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, what you've got in your area, and every area is different.
Okay.
Every area's got certain positive things. Every area's got some things that they're deficient in.
Is there a captain or some
that's
person?
That's what you guys have. Okay, have good leadership, and you guys have steady leadership. Some of the obstacles that I've run into is when you start a program and you've got good leadership and they're gung-ho at first, things will kind of settle down if they don't have an actual issue that needs to be addressed, and the leadership runs out of drive, basically. And then the program goes downhill, and without a leader, the people lose interest. So what you have in your area, you've got good leadership that's been around for a long time, okay, and I've worked with you.
Explain to the listeners what you expect from the people in regards.
Well, that's kind of a catch-22 there. It's what I try to get people to understand is that the programs that are available for them to do in their neighborhoods, the only people that benefit from those programs are the people that live in that area. So to me personally, if an area doesn't want to start a neighborhood watch program, it's not me that's not benefiting from it. Obviously, it's going to help out with the crime statistics in our city, which I'm, you know, very interested in. But
how are they, by the way, in comparison?
I'll tell you what. I'll give you.
Since you brought up.
I'll give you just a catch-all here. This winter, and I don't know if it's because it was so harsh, but
all the crooks in the indoor.
Well, it never has before. I mean, but this winter actually, we observed a pretty big reduction in the amounts of crime that happened in our city. Every type of crime: property crimes, violent crimes, felonies, misdemeanors.
So Jay, we must pray for bad weather.
Well, you know, I have to say, and I host the WHFR Journal, which is on Fridays from 1 to 2 o'clock, and we cover Dearborn more, but the area issues and the top news stories of the week in Dearborn Heights, as well as Dearborn, of course, and some downriver. And I have to say, it looks like crime stats have been improving, which means crime seems to be down in most categories over the last 10 years, in fact, if you're generalizing. So, you know, sometimes on my show, I get quite opinionated. I ask crazy questions like, do we really need all these SWAT teams? Do we need an armored tank? Okay, the government gave us, at least in Dearborn, a really good discount on a former armored vehicle, which is, except for parades, is not used. Still, I guess it's nice to have all that stuff because, you know, you don't know what might happen. But it's wonderful that crime stats are down. The crime in general across the U.S. Now, certain areas are, you know, urban areas across the country are not quite so lucky. But even New York City, which used to be, terrible crime. That's pretty much cleaned up. And, of course, they have a good police force. But I think they've always had a good police force. So there's some other factors involved here. And I always... on the news, we always see, crime here, crime there. Every night there's a crime story or two. And
good news.
Most people think there's a lot more crime than what there is.
Well, good news isn't news.
Well, I know that, yeah. But the idea is we don't want any crime if we could ever get to that point. You know, we want to find ways to give people options other than stealing or hurting other people, And that's what I think it's so good about the prevention program, because you're trying to find ways to discourage and prevent crime as well as, keeping eagle eyes out for somebody that's suspicious.
Well, I say there's three things you need for a crime to be committed, and one of them is a victim, which we're all victims at any time. We could be a victim. The other one is desire of the offender to commit the crime, which you really don't have much control over that. But what crime prevention has control over is the opportunity.
Because later on in the program, we're going to talk about the opportunities that you should not present to people that are disposed to crime. But while we're still on Neighborhood Watch, let's assume a listener who's, you remember when they started the Southwest Dearborn Heights Neighborhood Association.
Right.
When they didn't have anything, somebody called you, they started. What are they doing differently than they did before they started the association?
Well, they.
So what is how does Neighborhood Watch manifest itself differently to them there? Now, they needed it there.
They haven't started Neighborhood Watch yet.
They've
started the association, the Civic Association.
Okay, so what happens when they establish Neighborhood Watch? Have you gone to them and spoke to them about
it? We're going to work on that Thursday, actually.
That's when they meet, the third Thursday of the month.
Well, that's when I'm going to meet. I'm actually putting together a meeting at the police station.
So when you go there, what does that program look like?
Well, we'll
just outline the 1, 2, 3.
We'll go back to the leadership. I mean, you have to have a leader that's willing to take on the role of maybe a go-between.
Okay, we find the leader. What's her name there? That's the president. I'm trying to think of her name. Pauline.
Caroline.
Yeah. Okay. What do you want her to do?
Well,
forget who it is. What is she supposed to do?
I want her to delegate some job tasks to people who are willing to
be eyes on the neighborhood, essentially?
Correct. And to actually be leaders of blocks or multiple blocks.
And what do they do? Walk around, talk to people?
There's plenty of things they can do. They can walk around, talk to people, see what the actual interest is in the group. They're going to have to explain this whole responsibility thing that people are going to have when they're part of a Neighborhood Watch group. We're going to get back into the basics of what's expected out of you as a homeowner and a neighbor and a resident. And pretty much those group leaders will report to the Neighborhood Watch coordinator, who will be in contact with me constantly.
Okay. For example, I know the Military Park Association, the northeast corner of the city, is a particularly effective one, in your opinion. Am I right? Because they have a lot of problems there, but I thought they worked a lot. Mr. Lynch is very much involved with it, and Jack McIntyre, our ordinance person, lives there. But he's not now.
Right. They had really good leadership, and they were actually the benchmark program for our city.
That's what I thought.
Yes. Well, that's not necessarily true anymore. They lost some leadership, they lost some interest, and they've seen their program kind of diminish, and they've seen crime stats in that area go up. So this is part of the whole process. When we start groups, out of experience, I'll let these people know, hey, listen,
so
a group's great, you got to keep it going, or the crime will sneak back in.
I'm looking at this as a listener listening to this in Dearborn Heights. It says, okay, what do I do? Who do I call? What do I have to do to start the watch? That's call you, give them your number, or call who? How many other people are associated with this? It's only you, right?
With crime prevention?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just me.
Okay.
Answer. Let him answer. I'd like to find out.
Give me a call, and we've got blocks that are just specific blocks. Obviously, I will give them guidance on how to start it, what the best things to do, the best communication with your residents are. You're going to have to get out there. You're going to have to meet people. It's a big effort to organize, to start. And ultimately, I would hope that, you know, as word gets around, maybe blocks that adjoin their street, you know, neighboring blocks will get involved. And it's kind of like, you know, the small snowball at the top of the hill. When it gets down to the bottom, it's, you know, it's huge. You get somebody to start that. We're looking for more leaders to actually join and see the benefits of the program, too. It's not just empty promises. I can prove that crime goes down in areas that have neighborhood watch programs.
Okay.
It's certainly because you're working with volunteers, there's sort of an ebb and flow. I mean, some people might actually physically move out of the district or have a job change or you know, a time of day change or something when they're available. And so it does keep people like yourself busy constantly trying to reorganize or get the attention. Like you said, this is a sort of a special meeting this Thursday at the police station.
Yep.
To try to pull people together. I know this is, in fact, Ned, did you know that National Volunteer Week? There's always a week, you know, devoted to something.
Yeah, we have
but all the different volunteer organizations, including WHFR.FM, you know, if it wasn't for our volunteers, just like the Friends of the Dearborn Animal Shelter, we couldn't keep this going. But there's always an ebb and flow, and there's some people that are very excited for many years or sometimes just a little while, and then they leave or they decide to change responsibilities. So it's it takes constant effort to keep it going, and the police department has to put some time into it. Obviously, you have a special assignment, or part of your assignment is in keeping this going, and that is essential. But you can't do it by yourself, on the other hand, either. I mean, it takes a lot of community leaders. Is it typical that the leader of the neighborhood association is also the one that coordinates the neighborhood watch, or doesn't it have to be that way?
It doesn't. I'd rather have it not be that way.
Yeah.
I'd actually rather have the civic association leader deal with the things that they do in the civic association, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. delegate some duties to, like, a neighborhood watch coordinator. So, well, I can work with them directly.
Mm-hmm. Leaving this subject, what percentage of the city of Dearborn Heights has neighborhood watched?
50%? We're about 70% right now.
Okay, so that's a good percentage. Is that, yes, an average percentage?
And I think we're a little higher.
You're a little higher.
Most communities.
Okay. Well, we leave this subject of neighborhood watch, and we're ready for another station identification. And hopefully another promotion for our radiothon.
Yep.
You are listening to the Heights News and Views, a monthly talk show program presented on the second Tuesday of every month, right here on 89.3 FM, making waves from the Henry Ford Community College radio station, broadcasting from Dearborn, Michigan. You can re-listen to this archived program on the internet on your computer by selecting WHFR.FM. To get onto our homepage, select the talk show button and select today's date or any date of the second Tuesdays you wish at the time of 1 to 2 p.m. In the show title, Heights News and Views will appear and begin. And now to a PSA pertaining to our radiothon.
You would look great driving up in a new Ford. WHFR's radiothon and your chance to win a free weekend lease of a new Ford automobile, courtesy of Village Ford in Dearborn, is back. And entering the drawing this year couldn't be any easier. All you need to do is call and make a pledge of at least $30 or more during WHFR's radiothon, which runs from April 6th through April 12th. Be at least 21 years of age with a valid driver's license and be auto insured, and you could drive away with a beautiful new Ford. You can call and make a pledge right now at 313-845-9676. Just think, you cruising down Michigan Avenue in a new Ford. You could be this year's winner by making a donation to WHFR, something you were probably going to do anyway. WHFR's Radiothon 2014 is from April 6th through April 12th. The drawing for the weekend lease will be the last weekend in May. Pledges must be fulfilled by May 25th to be entered in the drawing. Don't let this one drive away without you. It's WHFR's Radiothon 2014 and a chance for you to win a free weekend lease of a new Ford, courtesy of Village Ford in Dearborn and the station making waves, 89.3 FM WHFR. Give us a call and make a pledge right now. 313-845-9676.
You know, pledging to Radiothon is a lot like going to church when the collection plate comes around. You know, you're not looking forward to it, but you're real happy that you contributed. Get on board and call right now. 313-845-9676.
Okay, we're back with Dearborn Heights News and Views, and back to your host, Ned Apigian, for April the 8th, 2014.
Well, our guest today is Officer Mark. And Officer, we're going to go into the next topic of things that the way you'd like to pose it, things we need to do to keep ourselves safe. How did you phrase it?
Responsibilities of neighbors and homeowners.
There you go. That's it. Responsibility always comes down to us people.
Yeah, I try to drive home in our community awareness meetings. Actually, our neighborhood watch program is part of a bigger program that the police department does, and it's actually called, we added to it. It's our program's called community awareness, and neighborhood watch is part of that. Also part of our community awareness program is our CERT team, our community emergency response team, which is a volunteer program. Residents in our city are trained how to assist first responders like the police and fire department in times of emergency. So floods, snowstorms, natural disasters, heaven forbid an unnatural disaster, plane crash, whatever. These volunteer trained personnel are able to assist us. So that's another part of our community awareness program.
They assist you, but they don't assist the person that's hurt or...
Well, they're not sure about that. They're not medical responders. They're not medical personnel. They do have packages that they are equipped with bandages.
So they can direct traffic. They can do things non-directly. So
correct.
To help. It's like another reserve officer.
Correct. Okay. Exactly.
All right. Go ahead. Explain those things you want them to.
We also expect our community awareness people to pay particular attention to the elderly residents, elderly and disabled residents in their neighborhoods.
No, other words, know who your neighbors are that may need special help.
Go one step further, not only know who they are, but to provide help to them if they do need help. One of our Gulfview Manor Civic Association started a senior care program. And during the summer when it was super hot, they would visit their elderly neighbors and provide them with care packages, fruit, water, books, companionship, whatever they need. Same thing in the winter, making sure that during a snowstorm or during bitterly cold weather that their houses were warm, secure, utilities were on, working properly. So that's the third part. Fourth part is we pay particular attention to bus stops at arrival time and dismissal time for the students in our city. So we ask all civic associations to contact their school district, get a map of the bus route or bus stops that are in their neighborhood, and make sure that somebody, one of the houses that adjoins these bus stops, somebody is watching when the kids get off the bus and when they arrive at the bus stop in the morning.
Well, the Gulfview Manor, I would say, is by far the best association.
I was there at their meeting last night.
And they meet more frequently than most, as I understand.
They've got great leadership.
Yes.
Yep. So anyway, that's what our community awareness program does. When we present this program to residents, my first responsibility is to explain to the participants that You know, not only are you part of this program, but you, as a homeowner, as a resident, as a neighbor, have responsibility in your neighborhood. And these responsibilities go beyond just, you know, keeping your house secure or, you know, parking your cars off the street or whatever it may be. You've got responsibility to keep your property up. You've got responsibility to pick up garbage that's blowing around in front of your house. You've got the responsibility to check on your neighbors. If there's something wrong, it's your responsibility to go check and make sure they're okay. It's your responsibility to take ownership of the area you live in and have pride in that area. So we really try to make the residents understand that just because you live in a house and you know, your four walls, your doors are closed, that doesn't negate anything else that you have to do as a valuable member of a community or neighborhood.
So isolated is not advantageous to the community, obviously.
Well, your neighborhood's not going to grow. I mean, back a long time ago, you know, people used to sit on their porches and you used to talk with your neighbors and everybody, you know, kind of, that's not that way anymore. I mean, a lot of people sit in their backyards with 8-foot-high privacy fences and they don't know what's going on next door. And I'm not necessarily saying being nosy.
They drive out of their attached garage, sure, and wave at you on their way out.
You get a wave if you're lucky. But, you know, that's part of the, that's kind of what we're trying to drive home to with our program. You know what? Make eye contact with people that are walking up and down your street. For two reasons. If it's actually friendly to your neighbors that do belong there, and it's intimidating when you make eye contact or contact with somebody who doesn't belong there when they're walking up and down your street too. So yeah, these are some of the things that as a resident in a community, you have responsibility as an owner, viable part of that community. So
okay, what are some of these things we should be doing, and then later things we shouldn't be doing?
Well,
let's begin with the positive, what we're doing, what we should do then.
At your home, obviously, the home for most is probably your biggest asset, your biggest, you know, you owning a home, that's probably the biggest thing you own. Obviously, you need to take care of it. You need to make sure your doors and windows are locked when you're not at home. You need to make sure your home looks lived in. And, you know, that includes even the smallest stuff. I tell people all the time, hey, listen, make sure your landscape is kept up. Make sure it's trimmed properly. Make sure it doesn't cover any of your windows. Make sure it doesn't provide a hiding space around your home. Make sure that it doesn't cast shadows at night. If you've got some outdoor lighting, you know, make sure that a bad guy can't use those shadows around your house that's caused by your landscape as a hiding spot. We were doing surveillance last year in an area that we were having some problems with some home invasions. We had one of our undercover directed patrol unit officers 3 doors away from where the offender was trying to get into a house. You saw him walk up the driveway, get to the corner of the house, and because it was so dark and there was so much landscape in that area, he did not see the person come back around the front of the house between the landscape and the window and actually get into a window past the front door. He could not see. He was fully lit street with street lights. He was 2 houses away and he couldn't see. So these are some of the things that bad guys use to their advantage. So
house lights that go off at different times,
sure,
automatically.
Absolutely. Maybe some motion detectors. You know, keep your trees trimmed up high, you know, 5 or 6 feet off the ground. Keep your ground clearance, your ground cover trimmed, you know, maybe a foot off the ground. Make sure your property it looks lived in. Make sure everything's picked up around the exterior of your yard.
People have a tendency to leave their garage doors open.
Constantly. Think about how much money, asset-wise, is inside your garage right now. With all your tools, lawn equipment, there's thousands of dollars inside there. And that is one of the...
They're easy enough to open, too, aren't
sure.
they?
I mean, well, it's one of the most neglected...
How about the idea, if your garage is easily accessible, that the door between your home and the garage should be locked or
keyed? It should be as secure as your front or back door.
Right.
If you've got a door leading from your garage into your house, that door should have the same security that you would have for your
front
or back
door. You find most people are not doing that in your break-in histories?
There's a lot of people, actually, that have no door. They just have like a screen door between the garage and their home.
Well, that would have to be a heated garage.
I'm just wondering if in some of these discussions you have with the community groups, there must be some people, and I won't go into recent events specifically, but some people that would say, do you recommend us having our own guns?
I don't recommend.
For personal defense.
Yeah, I don't recommend one way or the other. I haven't. I mean, I've been in this city doing police work since 1987, and I can't recall any incidents where that actually came into play. Mm-hmm. Either, you know, somebody was apprehended because the homeowner had a gun, or something bad happened because the homeowner had a gun. So I don't have any real data to back that up.
In the last couple of months, of course, there was the unfortunate incident nearby that someone came to someone's door and they thought it was a threat and they fired their weapon. Now, whether it was appropriate or not, let's not go into details because it hasn't been adjudicated yet, so I don't want to cast any blame here. I think they're asking for a trial outside this area now. I'm just saying there's always a danger with a dangerous weapon.
Sure.
And I personally know that in terms of the laws, I mean, if we license people to drive, and that requires a certain amount of training and road testing, that gun ownership ought to have a certain amount of training and even testing. Now, I know for a concealed carry permit, there's some limited experience that's required as part of that. But there isn't for gun ownership. You have to write, I think you just sign a document.
Right.
That you own the gun, and it's sort of signed off on if you haven't committed a felony or something, because there is now a federal gun registry to speak of. But and you don't have to comment on this, but I'm just sure that's a question some people bring up. Hey, when is it okay for me to, you know, brandish my firearm at my home? We don't have the same laws they have in Florida, for example, about some of these things. And good to know the laws in Michigan.
Michigan does have that. The same law. I don't know the details.
It's
that
a little different.
So far, it's a little.
I'm sure
it's a little different. Well, a friend of mine, actually my mechanic, who lives in Detroit, couldn't go home one day, and the reason was the police blocked off. The lady that lives across the street, somebody entered her house, and she shot him.
Hmm.
And the guy left the house, the window he came in, and died on the front lawn.
No, it's tragic, but
I mean, it used to be the old days. They said if you shoot somebody, you better drag him back in the house. I guess
there is still the legal question. I'm just saying that education on this point is essential, as well as if you're going to own a gun, you have to know the laws that are involved. You have to know exactly what's going on there, but you have to be proficient in the operation, so that you don't hurt yourself or the wrong person too. But these are very dangerous things, and. You know, for a while there, it was like you don't have the right to shoot someone, even if they come into your house, unless they are also carrying a dangerous weapon and are close enough to do you physical harm. So I don't know
what
if you ever have to. Do you have to delineate this ever to the local groups? Do you have to go over this?
No, I don't.
Doesn't come up.
It does come up, but I don't.
Well, you're not promoting the idea of having your own.
No,
weapons.
But I'm saying it has to be done.
No, I mean, they are not, yeah.
No, I'm sure they're not promoting it, but still, for those that have the weapons or thinking of getting them, they need to have a way, and I don't think there's a system in place except for the concealed carry permits, for them to get the information about the appropriate use.
Yeah, I basically, through my training, too, is that would probably last thing I would suggest as far as personal safety or home safety.
Yeah, be the last thing. Okay.
Yeah, you know, we've got a whole bunch of different other things that
well,
we
aren't
go over
the facts
first.
That more people are hurt by their own weapon than the house? What's the facts on that? Is that true?
I don't have any stats.
Anyway,
for that,
well, it's time for us to have a radiothon. We have missed it, and I'm about ready to give my last ID at the quarter hour. You are listening to Heights News and Views, a monthly talk show program presented on the second Tuesday of every month, right here on 89.3 FM. Every second Tuesday of the month, making waves from the Henry Ford Community College radio station, broadcasting from Dearborn, Michigan. You can re-listen to this archive program on the internet, on your computer, by selecting whfr.fm. to get to our station's homepage and select the talk show button and select today's date. The date's important, and you will get 1 to 2 p.m., the show title being Heights News and Views. Wait for the symphonic music for a couple seconds and the program will appear. And more importantly, our guest today is Mark Perinello. Mark's a corporal, right?
Yes, sir.
That's it, corporal. And I'm your host, Ned Apigian, which I haven't been announcing. And we're here with Chair Kornick, our station advisor. And we're going to hear another message to encourage you to support this radio program, else we can't have shows like this.
Yep, it's once a year only, folks. Listen to this endorsement from WHFR former DJ.
Hi, my name is Amanda, and I live in Chicago. And back from 1999 to about 2001, I was DJ Kitten Smack on WHFR Dearborn.
Here's another former WHFR staff member talking about how WHFR changed their life.
And I had a great experience being involved with WHFR. I loved promoting local and independent music, and I even found some of my favorite bands through WHFR, like Sleepy Time Gorilla Museum and Eleni Mandel. But best of all, lots of my lifelong friends I know through WHFR, so I'm super grateful for that. It's a great place to learn radio and meet new friends and promote and learn about new music. So I loved it. So don't forget, support local independent radio.
Thank you, Amanda, and thanks again for your continued support. Now it's time for you out there to show your support. Get on board and give us a call. 313-845-9676. Make a pledge today. You would look great driving up in a new Ford. WHFR's Radiothon and your chance to win a free weekend lease of a new Ford automobile courtesy of Village Ford in Dearborn is back. And entering the drawing this year couldn't be any easier. All you need to do is call and make a pledge of at least $30 or more during WHFR's Radiothon, which runs from April 6th through April 12th. Be at least 21 years of age with a valid driver's license and be auto insured, and you could drive away with a beautiful new Ford. You can call and make a pledge right now at 313-845-9676. Just think, you cruising down Michigan Avenue in a new Ford. You could be this year's winner by making a donation to WHFR, something you were probably going to do anyway. WHFR's Radiothon 2014 is from April 6th through April 12th. The drawing for the weekend lease will be the last weekend in May. Pledges must be fulfilled by May 25th to be entered in the drawing. Don't let this one drive away without you. It's WHFR's Radiothon 2014 and a chance for you to win a free weekend lease of a new Ford, courtesy of Village Ford in Dearborn and the station making waves, 89.3 FM WHFR. Give us a call and make a pledge right now. 313-845-9676.
And now we're back with the last few minutes of this month's Dearborn Heights News and Views with your host, Ned Apigian.
Well, Mark is going to tell us something about what businesses have to do as well as what homeowners have to do. Tell us what we've been doing wrong and what we should be doing right. Thanks.
Mark. Well, we actually tried last year to start a little bit of a business watch program, and along the same lines is our community awareness program, Neighborhood Watch organization. We're going to try to get communication between businesses and the police department improved in the next few months. So we're going to press release will come out probably next week. There'll be information in the Dearborn Heights Today paper, and we're going to encourage businesses to contact me with an email address or a contact email so that we can send them out information on things that are happening in the city that might affect businesses alike. So I do know that in the past couple weeks we had a problem with along Telegraph Road with some counterfeit money being passed, and that would be something that other businesses would benefit from knowing. Hey, listen, just to let you know, this is what's happening along Telegraph by Ford Road. Be aware, we didn't have any suspects, but if we did, we could pass that along too. So kind of the same thing that our residential program does, we're going to start it with the businesses.
I would think businesses were a little bit more attentive about that. Do you find them to be equally as reluctant to do what they should do as residences do?
Well, you know what?
They usually have alarms and all sorts of things. Most homes don't.
They do. And a lot of the emphasis that I want to place on the businesses and starting this program would be helping take care of or make safe their customers. So if things are happening in a parking lot, we had incidents last year where they were taking catalytic converters from cars, parked cars, you know, patrons of businesses. And if we could, there's money, scrap metal money in catalytic
converters. Is that easy to do?
Well, I didn't think it was, but we've got them on video. It takes about a minute. They crawl underneath the car with a battery-powered saw and just chop off the two pipes that the catalytic converter.
And then they take the innards out somewhere
else. Take the innards out to a scrapyard.
Let's not give too many details, folks.
Yeah. Well, it's been on TV.
What's inside that couch? Yeah. I was going to say.
But just something like that our businesses, if they're being victimized by this, I think that businesses ought to be able to share that information, and the police department should have an avenue to do that. So.
Okay. Now, I understand our police department is a little bit under, but we're looking for applicants. We need about 3 or 4.
Yeah, I'm not sure where our numbers are.
You don't know where your numbers are?
I pretty much thought we were up to snuff.
Okay. Well, I thought the listeners would be happy to know that we're up to our full 55 or so is what we need.
I believe that's what we have on the road right now. So, yeah, it's part of our education too with our
because we have some as you know, we have some retirees always retiring and that leaves openings for 3 or 4 people.
Yeah, we might have another couple retire in the next 3 or 4 months. But it's maybe 1 or 2 a year that we have. So that's the resident. We are pretty much full staff right now.
Okay. What's the retirement requirement for the city of Dearborn Heights? Maybe the people would like to know.
Well, there's a whole formula. That's actually, I mean.
So it has to do with your age and number of years of service?
Your age, and I think it's 25 years of service or service credit. So
plus your military service, if you had some.
It could. Some people took advantage of that. There's some prior service credit.
What's the number you have to reach? Like your age, 25?
It's 25 for a full retirement, at least with the police
department.
And they
don't care how old you are?
No, it's 25.
It's not like working at Ford. Your number has to reach 80, your age plus the number of years you worked.
Yeah, I know a lot of different departments and different companies actually have formulas, but it's 25 years with our city.
Okay, you have any parting words before we'll do another radiothon plug for ourselves lively?
Any events coming up? Any activities other than the Thursday night meeting for that one association, of course?
Yeah, we have some events coming up in the spring. I know the Rotary Club does a bike rodeo at the police department. That's coming up in May. Just check the city website for the things that are up and coming. I know our national night out, it's in the summer. It's usually the first Tuesday in August. It's a citywide event that the police department and the Chamber of Commerce put together. So we'll be working on that. Just that'll be on the city website, too, for the dates and times.
That's a nice combination, the Chamber of Commerce. I'm surprised. Do we do anything together with the Dearborn Police Department, our brothers and sisters next door?
We there's most of the job fairs, including the one here. We don't work in conjunction with them, but they attend also. As far as joint programs that we have with them,
You have a joint job fair?
Well, it's a job fair that just about everybody from the Tri-County area is invited to, so.
Jay, would you like to?
Yeah, no, that's all good to know. We're coming to the end of our Dearborn Heights News and Views time here on Radiothon 2014 week.
And we can give another plug.
I was just going to ask, just announced in the news that the state of Michigan has awarded Dearborn Heights, and Melvindale a $4 million grant to work out a merger of your emergency dispatch services. And that's kind of cool. I assume that's going to streamline things. Did you have certain problems with dispatching before? You had a lot of part-timers. I'm asking both of you if you know anything about this. But
It seems that our electronics wasn't jived. Dearborn's system and ours is different. And what we have to do is get electronically jived together. Melvindale is a new thing to it. When I saw that in the paper, that was news to me.
Right.
I'm sure tonight's meeting, maybe we might talk about that.
Yeah, because our Dearborn fire chief, who was quoted, he said, you know, we just put in the application. We don't really know the details yet of how we're going to work it out. But it does mean that there might be greater efficiency. That's why the state gives the money, supposedly be greater efficiency and less cost.
I don't know who gets the $4 million. Is it divided?
Yeah, or it'll be split up. But,
well, the $4 million will go into the changing the electronics in order to make them talk to each other.
And probably retraining and so on. But there might even be a central facility. I don't know. I'm sure electronically they can patch switchboard or the other. But it's going to all emergency services, whether it's police or fire.
We were going to manage it. The
9/11,
last I heard,
you know,
we
ambulances.
Were going to manage it. We were going to
Oh, well, good for you. Okay, well, Ned, you'll work that out, right?
But the new thing was Melvindale to me. I hadn't seen that.
Wow.
But the only reason we were talking about doing it was this. Our equipment is mismatched, and that $4 million will help solve that problem.
Yeah, well, that's all good news. Well, I want to thank our special guest, Mark Perinello from Dearborn Heights Police Force, crime prevention officer there. Go to the Dearborn Heights website for more information about activities of the department in the community, and get involved, you know, with the police so that we can do a better job for everybody. Any final thoughts, Ned?
No, that's about it. I think we covered everything.
I think we've got to play a Radiothon pledge pitch here and then move on to our next show. So
absolutely.
Thanks to all of our listeners. Please make a generous pledge at 313-845-9676 right now. And thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Amanda, and I live in Chicago.
You would look great driving up in a new Ford. WHFR's Radiothon and your chance to win a free weekend lease of a new Ford automobile, courtesy of Village Ford in Dearborn, is back. And entering the drawing this year couldn't be any easier. All you need to do is call and make a pledge of at least $30 or more during WHFR's Radiothon, which runs from April 6th through April 12th. Be at least 21 years of age with a valid driver's license and be auto-insured, and you could drive away with a beautiful new Ford. You can call and make a pledge right now at 313-845-9676. Just think, you cruising down Michigan Avenue in a new Ford. You could be this year's winner by making a donation to WHFR, something you were probably going to do anyway. WHFR's Radiothon 2014 is from April 6th through April 12th. The drawing for the weekend lease will be the last weekend in May. Pledges must be fulfilled by May 25th to be entered in the drawing. Don't let this one drive away without you. It's WHFR's Radiothon 2014 and a chance for you to win a free weekend lease of a new Ford, courtesy of Village Ford in Dearborn and the station making waves, 89.3 FM WHFR. Give us a call and make a pledge right now. 313-845-9676.
Hey, this is Hunter Muldoon.
And I'm Shane Muldoon.
And we're the Muldoons.
And you're listening to WHFR,
the only station that's supporting the local music scene.
You know, pledging to Radiothon is a lot like going to church when the collection plate comes around. You know, you're not looking forward to it, but you're real happy that you contributed. Get on board and call right now, 313-845-9676.
Spend all your time. This is Madman Glaze on the Drop Top here on WHFR.FM. This year's Radiothon, we're asking everybody to donate just as much as you possibly can so that we can keep producing the same awesome shows that you guys have known to love right here on WHFR.